From Interfaith Alliance, this is State of Belief Radio. I'm your host, Reverend Welton Gaddy, broadcasting this week from Monroe, Louisiana.
A president's first year in office, filled with potential and peril.
It's been a tough year for most Americans. With the challenges we've all been facing, how do you like to have been the president? For a look at Joe Biden's first year in the Oval Office, I'm looking forward to the expert insights of political management expert Greg LaBelle.
The United States faces a real threat from extreme individualism and also from radical secularism, which takes the legitimate separation of church and state too far by trying to limit or deny the freedom of religion and conscience.
As so much of the world struggles with matters of religion, whether the question is brutal oppression along sectarian lines or manipulation of religious freedom rhetoric, the core secular values that in fact unite all of humanity often get short shrift. A new book from a noted scholar on the subject, Georgetown University's Jacques Berlinerblau, urgently goes back to basics with the title Secularism, the Basics.
I have a dream. My four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today.
With Martin Luther King Day coming up on Monday, we'll also revisit a conversation I was privileged to have the last year with Martin Luther King III, the eldest son of the slain civil rights hero. Our program airs every weekend on radio stations nationwide and is available as a podcast on iTunes and other leading podcast platforms. I urge you to subscribe to it today. State of Belief Radio is made possible in great part by the generous support of our listeners. If you've made a donation this week, and some of you have, thank you so much. If you haven't pitched in yet, you still can. Information on how you can help keep this show on the air is available at stateofbelief.com. That's stateofbelief.com. And now to our first guest. It was a heady time in late 2019 when political management expert Greg LaBelle and I were covering the presidential election. Since then, the world has sustained so many twists and turns that none of us could have predicted anything. But Joe Biden won the White House, and he's been playing the hand that he's been dealt. For a look at the first year of this administration, I'm really pleased to be joined by my dear friend, Greg LaBelle. Greg, welcome back to State of Belief Radio.
Thank you, Welton. Your introduction was spot on. Absolutely spot on.
Well, 2021 was not a year in which I would want to be president of anything. But every leader gets thrown some curveballs sooner or later. And so how has Biden done overall, in your opinion?
It became clear in looking at how people voted in 2020 that Trump voters voted for Trump. A lot of Biden voters voted for him because he wasn't Trump. And therein lies a big part of his problem, I think, as a president, because that creates a very sort of soft ground on which he stands. We've seen this in elections before. Usually, people lose if there's not enough support for them actually taking the job, as opposed to just taking the job away from the person who has it now. So that, I think, is part of the challenge that he faces. I think 4 years of Trump were disastrous for the country in many ways. I mean, the undermining of public trust in public institutions, everything from the Justice Department to the CDC, rhetoric that was regularly severed from reality. And I think that what we saw, and again, reasons to be glad that it didn't continue, I mean, this was really sort of a traveling medicine show of a presidency where truth simply didn't matter, where fooling the people, as many people as we could, mattered. I mean, it was about what we like to call, because we're polite, disinformation, but what we have to call lying, and racism and authoritative rhetoric created a situation. So this is, as you said, this is sort of what Biden stepped into. Mm-hmm. And by some measures, I would say he's done quite well. In fact, done some things that nobody thought he could. The $1.9 trillion COVID relief package, first and foremost. I mean, this was a major accomplishment. The $1 trillion infrastructure package that was barely bipartisan, but bipartisan in its passage in Congress. And we do tend to forget the things that did not happen, but we remember the dire warnings of supply chain problems leading up to Christmas. And everyone was saying, no one's going to be able to find Christmas gifts and so on and so forth. They managed to keep that at least at bay through the end of the year. We're not out of that yet. But I think succeeded beyond what most people sort of hope would be the case. So those are the good things. And they're pretty good things. Mm-hmm. But then you look at sort of the other side of this. And we have to start with Afghanistan, yeah. The withdrawal from Afghanistan, I think, was a failure of both some combination of planning and messaging. There were some acknowledged problems in the planning that went into it. But also the messaging may not have been as clear in terms of what we could expect. Those of us who are old enough to remember when we left Vietnam know that these things are never clean. They're never easy. Yeah. But I don't think there was the public recognition of that, or the preparation of the public for the fact this is going to be hard. So it sort of opened up that problem for him on an international level. Yeah. Delta variant, Omicron variant, confusion over what the protocols were for all of this, mask or not mask, school or no school. And this is just the nature, I think, of learning to deal with a worldwide pandemic as we're going through it. Yeah. Now what we're looking at, everybody's talking about, is the shortage of testing, of the availability of tests. There's clearly a theme here, and it's the word is COVID. Two things that are still hanging out there are Build Back Better legislation and election reform, the John Lewis legislation in H.R. 1.
The president came to the office with a strong reputation as a bipartisan negotiator. Have we seen any of that in his first year in office?
This also is complicated. I think that Joe Biden, the years he spent in the United States Senate, the years he spent in the Congress, certainly prepared him in some ways more than some of the other people who were running for the Democratic nomination. Again, the downside of that is I suspect that Joe Biden was expecting to work with a Congress and especially a Senate that doesn't exist anymore. Mm-hmm. And that has been a challenge, because we are in a different place in terms of legislative politics in this country. You know, those of us who studied political science back in the years past, the last century, you know, we talked a lot about the 50s and 60s with the rise of personal candidacies brought about by television. Yeah. Well, I think that the rise of social media has changed that in incredible ways. I mean, you have members of Congress now who not only are able to reach out to the general public around party or whatever it happens to be, but without even having to worry about talking to anyone beyond their specific base. And that's sort of changed the nature of how that whole process works.
Yeah.
So in some ways, I think he kind of wishes this were back when he were in the Senate, but it's not.
Yeah.
And we see him struggling with that. We see him struggling with that, with messaging and how to work, not only with the opposing party, but with members of his own party. So this has been a challenge for him.
There was some concern early in this administration that Biden was leaning on sectarian faith language pretty regularly. Did that concern you at all? And if so, has he stopped doing it?
The concern is that it's not who he is. And whatever one can say, and I think we have lots of reasons to sort of look at ourselves as a society now and wonder exactly what and who we are anymore. One thing that I still cling to is that I think most Americans can smell inauthenticity when it comes by.
Right.
And I think usually it's been the opposite in the Democratic Party. We've had Democratic leaders in the Democratic Party who tried to adopt the language of faith and morals and did it terribly. I think of one of my own bosses, who I have great respect for, Howard Dean. Poor mm-hmm. Howard Dean. Yeah. He tried, you know, and it was just so inauthentic. He just couldn't do it. Biden, for a while, I think, had the opposite problem in that he didn't want to speak from where he really is. And I, as I said, I think we might not be able to articulate it, but I think voters, they know authenticity when it comes by. And I think that's been part of the challenge for him. The press hasn't made it easy for him. Certainly the other side has not made it easy for him. And I'd say in some ways, his allies have not made it easy for him in some way.
That's exactly right.
So it's sort of, again, talk about being stuck between a rock and a hard place here on these issues. But
and, you know, of course, with the level of influence the political religious right has had and how effectively they've smeared more progressive Americans as godless and hateful towards religion, it only makes sense to not neglect people of faith if you're a president who is a Democrat. Are we seeing any progress on that front, on connecting around shared values?
Yes. Yes. And that's one of the hopeful signs that I have seen in the recent past. I think that progressive religious communities have decided to come out of the closet and speak up. And we've seen that in a number of instances. In some ways, I think one of the events that sort of pushed that along was when the former president showed up in front of St. John's Church in Lafayette Square, waving a Bible in the air like it was a cudgel of some kind. I think that was one of several, and I think it had already begun then, but that was certainly a moment that sort of brought together people of faith who were willing to say, this is not the faith that I was taught, that we understand. This is not the Bible that I read, the way I put it when I talk to people. So yes, and I applaud that. Sure. We've seen the same thing on another level, I think, with the media in their dealing with some of these issues. We hear people calling some of the stuff that's coming out of Trump and Trump supporters lies, outright lies. But I definitely sensed a movement on the part of progressive religious communities to stand up and take a stand. And that's really, really important.
Greg, you've done this all of your life in various situations. What would you advise the president to do differently in terms of managing his team as well as communicating with his constituents?
Democrats, for whatever reason, seem to have challenges in communication once they control the White House. Barack Obama, for all of the genius and the remarkable skill that man brought to the presidency, the Obama White House had similar problems with putting together a message once they were in the White House that worked. And I think that just continues to be. I think part of the challenge is that Republicans sort of talk in stark terms. It's black or white. You're good or you're evil. You know, if you're with us, you're good. If you're not with us, you're evil. But Democrats are much more nuanced. The issues we understand are much more nuanced than it's just not here or there. And so it's a tougher task, I think, to get those messages out. But we've got to get better at it. I think Jen Psaki has done a remarkable job. I'm really sorry that she's going. This is not to take away from whoever takes her place, but I think she's done a remarkable job in doing that. But again, we have been now acculturated after 4 years to overt and stupid simplicity. And a lot of people sort of find that a comfortable place to be. So we as a society have to sort of smarten up and expect more of the people who are telling us what's going on in the world.
Vice President Harris has received a good deal of criticism for her style as well as performance. What's your take?
She's a woman. She's a woman of color. Let's start there. So she is going to be a target of that kind of stuff automatically. Mm-hmm. And I think that is a big part of what's going on. There's the sexism and racism attached to this on the part of some people. Mm-hmm. But I think this is magnified by the fact that most of us, including myself, do not believe that Joe Biden intends to run for re-election, which means that this is the time for the vice president to be, stepping up to the plate. Mm-hmm. But that's a tough balancing act because she needs to step up to the plate and show who she is. But she's the vice president. Mm-hmm. And she has to be careful, as any vice president has to be, about how they do that. But I think she's been dropped into this. I don't think they're going to go through a first term, reelect to a second term, and then she begins to sort of carve out who she is. So that's, I think that combination of things puts her in a really, really difficult spot.
Yeah.
She's had some staffing problems. She needs to figure that out and she needs to get that straightened out quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But I think primarily we're dealing with racism, sexism, and the fact that everyone is sort of looking at her as the likely nominee in 2024. Mm-hmm. There's no time outside of the spotlight for her. None. So it's going to be like this for her.
What do you expect will happen in the midterm elections?
We will lose. The Democrats will lose. We can't expect anything else. Now, lightning could strike, but I think the problem is that Democrats sort of developed an idea that we're sort of entitled to this stuff. And I think that's been a problem for us in several election cycles. The nature of the electorate is changing. We're, you know, a higher percentage of minorities and so on and so forth. And of course, we all know all minorities will vote Democrat. Well, it turns out that ain't so true. So we're sort of struggling at that. I think the likelihood is that we lose the House. I think that the Senate is up for grabs.
Hmm. It's ridiculous to even talk about the next presidential election, but here we are with the first Hillary 24 stories already published. What are your thoughts about the next cycle?
Muddle. Well, we've talked about the Democratic side pretty much already. And I think one of the challenges, is, of course, is, you know, the vice president is and should be a prohibitive favorite here. Does any white guy really want to take on Kamala Harris? I don't know. I wouldn't. That doesn't seem like a wise move. For all kinds of reasons. Again, as a sitting vice president, this is hers to lose, but she has to lose it. It can't be taken away from her. That's just the reality of the way this politics works. On the other side, God only knows. I mean, is Trump going to run again? I stubbornly cling to the belief that he will not. And I stubbornly, and I wonder whether I should say this out loud, but in some ways, I think I would rather have Trump with all his negatives running than some of the Trumpies that don't have some of his negatives.
Yeah.
There are some candidates out there who want to be the Trump of 2024 who are much more camera appealing, much less screedy, but they all believe the same stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They all want to be the Trump of 2024. I'm not sure which is better, which is worse. I don't know, but I lean toward he lost because he was Trump the last time.
Yeah.
Some of these other folks could carry the same water, but not be Trump. So, scary.
Greg, what are you focusing on in terms of American government and politics right now? And we should be looking at the same thing.
Oh, we just turned down a very dark, dark alley. I have to be honest with you, Welton. I am, and I'm not alone in this, I am concerned about our ability to survive this. I have to be just honest. This is not.
And what does that mean?
I don't know that the guardrails will hold, that managed to hold in this last cycle. We came dangerously close. I think the report that will come out of the House investigation will be stunning in things that we never even imagined in terms of coming as close as I think we came to a democracy that no longer looks like the democracy that you and I grew up with.
Yeah.
And I think that Republicans are doing everything that they can to weaken the guardrails that did exist. And that frightens me.
Yeah.
And this is where I'm concerned about some Democrats. I don't understand how Joe Manchin and Kristen Sinema can sit there and say, we need 12 Republicans to join. They know there aren't 12 Republicans there to go because they can't. Those who want to are frightened to death.
Yeah.
But the majority of them, I think, wouldn't do it anyway. And I am worried for, I keep thinking of that quote from Benjamin Franklin, yeah. We've given you a Republican, but if you can keep it. And I worry that we may not be able to keep it anymore. And that scares the daylights out of me. Sorry. Right.
Greg LaBelle is Professor Emeritus of Political Management at George Washington University. Greg, thank you for being honest. And thanks so much for always being honest on State of Belief Radio.
Thank you, Welton. Thank you.
We need to take a quick break now, but we're just getting started with this week's show. Up next, the author of an important new book titled Secularism, The Basics, and later, MLK III on MLK Jr. You're listening to State of Belief Radio, brought to you by Interfaith Alliance. I'm Welton Gaddy.